246.
246. So if you remember, the board asked for a committee.
Josh left.
Oh, yeah, and let the record note that Mr. Greer has left during the break and has not, and will not return to the meeting. No, by yourself. Set up a committee, of which Judy was elected the chair of the committee, so we'll let her just kind of address you real quick.
So very informally and impromptu, the committee met in person and via email on several occasions to discuss various options with respect to CE tracking. For those of you who don't know, I'm formerly with the Federation of State Boards of Physical Therapy, who offered the aptitude system that your licensees utilize to track and your board utilize to audit. Since the discontinuation of aptitude, a successor was necessary, and so we, the team went through, the task force went through the process of kind of identifying a few potential options. And out of those options, the discussion led to CE broker as potentially the most viable option to supply what the board needs with respect to auditing. So with that, I can give you Donald.
Right, so the committee recommends CE broker, and so we've asked them to come and share their information with you. And then at the conclusion of the presentation, then we'll ask for a motion on whether or not you would like the voluntary use of CE broker as the alternative to the aptitude. All right.
Thank you so much. And just before I hop in, I did want to share one extra resource with you. We have a sample copy of our agreement with a few of the other Arizona boards as well, just as kind of a model. Of course, thank you all as well for giving me a little bit of time this afternoon. So I have a quick slide presentation here that's just going to give you an overview of how the platform works, some of the other boards that we work with specifically in physical therapy, and just kind of an overview of our company and some history about us as well. But if you have any questions at any point, feel free to cut me off. I'd like to keep it conversational if possible. So to put it very briefly, CE broker is a unique software company that partners with licensing agencies to simplify and automate the process of continuing education. And our big selling point has always been that we're able to do it without any mandatory cost or burden to any of the main stakeholders. I think many can agree that CE compliance and specifically the audits are notoriously a headache, both for licensees and state regulators. So we do what we can to simplify that process wherever possible, and just make it more manageable for both parties to deal with. We've seen the software platform model become pretty prominent in the world today. Obviously, you have industry leaders like Amazon or Airbnb that really changed the way we live and do business, but personally, we've always felt that the regulatory world has been somewhat underserved by modern technology. So it's been our goal to change that state by state. On the screen here, you can see a helpful graphic which just kind of breaks down how CE broker works and where the data is flowing. So as you can see, information is coming in from licensees, from educational providers, and from state boards, and all that's aggregated onto one platform and broken down by a comprehensive compliance engine that we customize to each state. So there's no one-size-fits-all with CE broker. We're actually tailoring the system to each individual board jurisdiction. As far as our history goes, we were founded back in 2003, and we originally began tracking for the Florida Department of Health. And that's where our company was basically born into the realm of continuing education. It was actually in response to a $0 RFP. So Florida's DOH needed some type of tracking or auditing system, but they didn't actually have the resources to build it or fund it themselves. So that's where they put out the RFP, and our platform was actually built in response to that RFP. And it really wasn't until the last 3 or 4 years that we started looking outside of Florida, kind of recognized that it wasn't just Florida that was having issues with continuing education and the audits. But since then, we've expanded to track continuing education for more than 120 state boards. We have a presence in 18 states today. And then we also support a network of more than 7,000 educational providers who are listing courses on our platform. And they're actually reporting the attendance rosters and completion data directly into the system. And that's really the secret ingredient that makes this so valuable to the licensing boards and to the auditing staff members as well. And then needless to say, if your profession has a continuing education component, it's more than likely something we've dealt with another board somewhere else in the United States. I think we have just over 110 unique professions in our system today. This is just a quick map of our growth over the last couple years. So we're still largely concentrated down in the Southeast, but of course we have begun expanding out west. We have quite a few exciting projects lined up in areas like California, New Mexico. We've also seen a lot of interest with Arizona boards lately as well. But one important thing to note here is that our current partnerships include a variety of umbrella agencies, like the Florida Department of Health or South Carolina's Department of Labor Licensing and Regulation, as well as independent licensing boards throughout the country. So whether it's the entire department or just an independent board, the solution does scale very well. So we've handled a bit of everything up to this point. Of course, some of the darker states grayed out towards the bottom are where we're actually tracking statewide for usually one of the main licensing departments. Obviously, in today's day and age, privacy and security are paramount for any organization. So our platform is compliant with Federal Information Processing Standards, or FIPS. We're also DSS compliant, and we have geo-redundant data servers in Jacksonville, Florida, and Boulder, Colorado, that just help us ensure stability and high uptime. But aside from this, the other primary way we protect ourselves is just by avoiding very personal or sensitive data. So anytime CE Broker contracts with a new board, a majority of the information we collect is already public-facing on the license verification pages. So that would be things like the practitioner name, license number, issue date, expiration date, and so on. But if the information doesn't affect their continuing education requirements, we don't require it for tracking, so that's one of the main ways we protect ourselves. So we don't collect anything like social security numbers or any private data beyond just simple contact information. And really a primary benefit to the platform that we've developed is that each of the three main stakeholders all receive their own unique login. So educational providers, licensed professionals, and the state regulatory staff are all accessing the system from their own perspective. They each have, you know, tools that kind of make sense for them. So first and foremost, we'll take a look at the regulatory suite. So state boards have access to an auditing dashboard where they can view individual CE records, generate bulk audits, pull detailed compliance reports, and even enforce disciplinary actions. So if a certain individual, or if all individuals had a 20-hour requirement, but someone needed an additional 4 hours for an ethics violation, you do have the ability to leverage those kind of additional requirements for disciplinary cases on CE Broker and track and, you know, ensure that that licensee has completed those additional requirements. As far as the compliance reports, that can be made available to the board for the meetings, and it can be something as simple as general population, how many of our licensees are compliant versus not compliant on any given calendar day, to even more detailed information like how many individuals are meeting their new ethics requirement or if legislation ever introduced new requirements as well. So our solution really aims to empower licensing boards who are typically dealing with a minimum number of staff members but large licensee populations, just by equipping them with tools that makes auditing a much more efficient and accurate process. And there really are two primary auditing methods that we support, and that's going to be your standard post-renewal random audits, and then a fully automated auditing option. So with option one, we've coined the term CE at renewal, and this basically just means the audit has become automated through our platform. So CE Broker can integrate with the state licensing database. I believe this board is using eLicense. But we're able to plug in so that if a licensed professional is going through that renewal flow online, the system can ping CE Broker to check on their compliance status. So in this scenario, each board or the department would have the ability to implement what we call a soft stop or a hard stop. With the hard stop, licensees can't renew until they've completed all of their necessary requirements. That's currently how Florida operates with CE Broker, and we've seen a few other states start to move in that similar direction. But on the other hand, some of our boards do prefer what we call the soft stop. This is where licensees can still proceed with renewal, even if they are compliant or not compliant, but they'll typically receive a pop-up warning at that last step that notifies them and says, hey, we can see you haven't reported all of your hours yet. You understand by proceeding with this application, you're attesting to meeting that requirement. So it's kind of that last little nudge that tries to encourage them to report before they finish renewing. And then, of course, from there, we're even able to flag those individuals for the board so that they have a more targeted list for their next audit. So if the board wanted to just pull 5% audit of the population who attested but reflected as not compliant, they would have the ability to do that as well within our platform.
So if somebody is randomly pulled and it shows that they did not complete their CEUs and they were actually warned of that during the process, would that document that?
Yes, so we can have documentation that they attested at this date, they did not reflect compliant, they were warned.
Okay.
We can send out renewal reminders, things like that as well, that lets them know, hey, you have 30 days to report your continuing education before the deadline closes.
Okay,
so Ms. Hunter, it's not our intent that we're going to tie this to our renewal, just to be clear. Okay.
And of course, there is flexibility there as well. So the board is never forced into one option or the other. We have the capabilities there. We just enforce whichever's in your best interest.
Thank you.
lot of boards today do go with option two, which is going to be that standard post-renewal audit. So most of the process remains the same for the board. But in the event of that random audit, the staff members are able to log in to complete the audit within CE Broker instead of requesting any mailed or faxed documentation from the licensee. And then in addition to the auditing tools that we provide, our system does have the ability to help boards manage provider or course approvals if necessary. So we've seen that having a dedicated staff member to process every individual course application can be a very time-consuming process. So the platform includes what we call a mini accreditation system, and it can collect all of the provider and course sponsor applications digitally, just route it to the appropriate staff member or to the CE committee for review. So we take those applications off the state website and just process them, but we don't actually complete the approvals ourselves in that sense. And then one final note on this slide is that we do program the system to understand nuances within the CE laws and rules. So if the board accepts any courses that have met a certain national accreditation or been approved by the association, we can set those to be instant approvals. If a provider can demonstrate proof that that course was accredited, it'll be listed on CE Broker as well. But courses can't get listed on our platform until they've either shown proof of accreditation or been individually approved by the board. So we try to create almost a sandbox environment for the licensee. They're never going to the course search and finding, you know, a Florida course that might not meet Arizona's requirements. The implementation process with CE Broker is relatively straightforward. Our timeline is typically 90 to 120 days from the contract being signed to having the system live and ready for the licensees. And throughout this process, there's a lot of research done on our end, with plenty of communication back and forth. And a majority of the work is just mapping out the requirements so that they're reflecting with 100% accuracy for any specific nuance. We understand that there's often tricky exemptions where a licensee might be serving in the military or on disability and they might have a temporary pass from their continuing education. So we try to program all of that information in the system ahead of time so that when you're logging in, no matter what your specific situation is, you're always going to see the relevant requirements for your case. This slide here just discusses our implementation methodology. Without getting too technical, we have five different teams that manage the implementation for any board. And of course, most of that work is, like I said, going through the laws and rules to create those transcripts. For some boards with simple requirements, that process is relatively straightforward. For others, it can get pretty tricky. One of our newest clients was New Mexico's Board of Nursing. They had one license type that would have up to 72 different scenarios, depending on if you were an advanced practice nurse and if you had a certain national certification. So we try to find every nuance inside the rules and simplify the situations as much as possible for the board and for the licensee. Moving on to the educational providers, there's also a few noteworthy benefits to be considered here. So once a course has been approved by the board or satisfies any of your accreditation requirements, it'll appear on the CE Broker course search. So we try to create a helpful directory for the licensees where they can find approved educational content. And it's important to note that we don't offer any CE ourselves, so we don't create courses. We're really just a neutral platform to host the approved content. And providers are given free exposure on our platform. That's kind of our angle, is to lure the providers in with the free exposure and ideally get them to start reporting the completions and attendance rosters. For a lot of our clients, they don't mandate that the providers report. I think Florida might be one of the only states that we work with right now that mandates all the providers have to report for any licensees. But even if they're not mandated, we do see usually 70 to 80% of the providers will report on behalf of their customers. We also give them a badge that they can display, so licensees browsing through courses can see provider A will report for me within 24 hours, provider B, I'm going to have to report it myself, and it helps them kind of weigh their options a little bit more effectively, save themselves some time. And these are the two primary web methods that information does get into the system, so it's either coming directly from the educational provider, or the licensee can self-report, and we have things like mobile apps where they can take a photo of their certificate, answer the series of questions, and all that information will get uploaded to their digital file. As far as how the providers get the information in the system, we try to remain as flexible as possible. We work with some groups that are approved in all 50 states and others that are just local instructors that are, you know, only offering courses in Arizona. So we try to give them as many options as possible to get the information in the system. The largest providers like HealthStream, OnCourse Learning, are already integrated with CE Broker today. So with those providers, if you take a course from them, even if it's on their website, it'll get instantly reported to CE Broker. With option two, we see that being very common with the medium-sized providers. If they have an attendance sheet or an Excel file, they can drag and drop that information into CE Broker, and the licensees will receive credit. And then the last option would be one-by-one reporting. We see that most commonly with just a very small local class. They can punch in the license numbers for each attendee individually, and they'll receive credit that way. And then moving on to the licensee experience, this is actually one area where we're able to generate a little bit of revenue that helps us fund the system and keep everything free for the state. But our business model does operate on what we call a freemium model. So the main focus is making sure that licensees have access to all the tools that they need to manage CE compliance and a user-friendly experience without having to pay a dime. So we offer three different account types where we can generate revenue if they elect an optional subscription. We're often compared to a TurboTax model where a majority of users are taking advantage of a free basic account. And that's where you have to work through things on your own, but it won't cost you a dime to take advantage of. So with the basic account, the licensees can sign on, view their compliance status at a glance. You can report and upload any necessary documentation to respond to an audit, find and compare course offerings, take advantage of our mobile apps, and then view a chronological course history that details everything you've reported, along with anything that's been reported by an educational provider. And then the next two account types we offer are the professional and the concierge. And these can basically take some of the work off of your shoulders, and they'll take you through step by step for every requirement you need to meet, and essentially holds your hand along the way. Our concierge account comes with a personal account manager. They can act as your personal assistant, report CE on your behalf, contact providers to register you for courses and events. We can essentially do everything other than take the courses for you, but with that freemium model, the licensees are given the final choice, so we try to include all the necessities available within a basic account, which is free for life, but plenty of folks do see added value in one of the premium accounts. So we pride ourselves on a business model that's only generating revenue if we're going above and beyond for our customers. And then for full transparency, out of the 2 million licensees that are using CE Broker today, it's about 13% are using one of the paid accounts, 87% are remaining with the basic account.
Is that a one-time fee or a yearly fee?
It's an annual fee. So it's $29 a year is the professional account, and the concierge is $99 per year. And then one unique aspect of our business that does set us aside from a lot of other vendors is that we do offer a dedicated support center for all of our clients based here in the United States. So licensees can actually call CE Broker if they just have a simple question about how many hours they need for the upcoming renewal, or if they need someone to walk them through reporting step by step if it's their first time uploading a PDF document. So our CE experts are available Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and they're based down at our headquarters in Jacksonville, Florida. So we don't outsource our support center. We actually do manage it all in-house. And it is significantly more expensive that way, but it's a big reason why our CSAT scores or customer service averages 4.5 or higher out of 5 stars. So quality is always the focus for us there. And as you can see on the screen, we handle quite a bit of volume for our partners, and we'll even have to stay open late on certain high renewal periods just for the amount of licensees we get calling in. As I'm sure many of you are familiar, people like to wait until the last minute. Even with their continuing education, so we will occasionally get those folks on the last day of renewal saying, what do you mean I can't take 30 hours? But just last month, our support center had to stay open until midnight for nurses in Florida. That's a major renewal rush. We have, I think, 400,000 nurses. Of course, 80% of them are probably waiting to that last week or two to knock things out. But licensees can reach us over the phone. They can live chat with us on our website or shoot us over an email and expect a response within 24 hours, and the support center and communications teams are really an important piece of the operation that just, you know, raise awareness about requirements and just serve to help out with licensees with that initial transition period. Arguably, the most popular feature we offer today is going to be the mobile apps for CE Broker. So these are free for all licensees. It doesn't matter what account type you have, whether it's one of the paid accounts or the free basic account. So anyone can download the mobile app. You can snap and report your certificates on the go, track your compliance status in real time, find courses on a phone or tablet, and it's, of course, a free download on Apple or Android devices. We do see a lot of the younger licensees doing everything mobile these days, so even if they don't have a laptop computer, there's really no excuse. They can just open up their smartphone, snap a photo of their certificate, and handle everything on the go. And then the final piece to mention is that CE Broker does have a simple API that allows us to connect to the state licensing system. So a lot of times we tell boards to think of our platform as almost a plug-in application that can just introduce added efficiency and enhance a lot of the processes that fall into the realm of continuing education. And that's about everything I had from my slide deck today. Any initial questions or things that you guys would like a little more information on?
I'm assuming you handle individuals who have multiple licenses in multiple states. tailor it so that if I've got a license in New Mexico and I've got a license in Arizona, the requirements are slightly different, but it will tell you whether or not you're on track for Arizona, but you're not on track for New Mexico.
Yes, that's correct, and I believe I can actually pull up a sample account, or I think we have the option to give you all a demo account so you can log in and see what it looks like, and we can even give you one that is a duly licensed individual, just so you can see. You can track multiple licenses side by side. The only caveat is there, we don't offer that ability if that board doesn't work with us yet. So, for instance, if it's a New York license and that board has an approved CE broker, we won't let the individual track it until we've received the blessing from the board first.
What other Arizona boards are using CE brokers?
Great question. So we're doing athletic trainers, occupational therapy, and most recently the podiatry board as well.
All right. And then I do have another question. You talked about that the providers that do report and that a licensee or certificate holder that was actually on the website would be able to see that this provider would self-report.
Yes.
I have to ask this as a lawyer. Do you have any disclaimer language in there that basically states that that the licensee or certificate holder is ultimately responsible under state law?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah. Right. So they know that it's always their responsibility.
Okay.
It's more of a convenience if that provider does report for them.
All right, fine. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Okay, any other questions? Then I move that we adopt CE brokers as a voluntary
option.
Can't write my
voluntary.
I need to put my
voluntary CEU
voluntary
depository.
Depository of CEU information for audit purposes.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All right. So that means that we're not requiring it of our licensees,
right.
Correct?
Right. We're not requiring that they upload in order to complete the audit, but we are giving them an online mechanism to store their certificates and to provide those certificates to us in the case they get audited.
Okay. Okay, so when he was talking about they can do the audit,
random audit, but we would not, unless the board directed, actually target those that we think are not, because then it's not so random any longer. So we would probably still say we have a random audit, can you pull 5% of our licensees and then go off that list. The nice thing is they can also take our audit letter and automatically email it and send it out for us, so it saves a lot of administrative costs for us.
But in order to do that, wouldn't we have to require this of all licensees?
No, because is that correct?
You're correct. It's still voluntary. Most of the boards that use us today don't mandate
right.
it, but when licensees do come under audit, they basically have their two options. I can mail and fax my documents to the board or upload them to CE Broker for free. We do see most will just take that option because it's a little bit easier.
But to do the audit.
So they can randomly select the names for us.
But they
based
they
upon
have,
all
they
of
have
our
names
licenses.
Names of
yes,
all,
they will. They'll have
all
of
licensees
our,
in Arizona?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. So that if that person wants to engage, they'll have an account that's got
and so
account.
They would do their 5% audit and then we would.
And then they would provide
but
us that
those
list.
Those who didn't have all the requirements may have gotten those CEUs
elsewhere,
but not reported them.
Yep, that's absolutely correct.
Okay.
And they
really
could still mail us their certificates. They don't have to use CE Broker if they don't want to.
Would that be less work or same amount or more?
It's less work for us, actually, if they upload and because it's really easy to
it
go
is,
through.
It is. If they do that. But
right, and if they don't, then they mail them and we do them by hand. I mean, we do it both ways.
Okay.
This is just an option.
Yeah, this is just an option, not a requirement. It's just an option, but because the board had approved the aptitude as an option, and now that's not an option, we thought it would be wise for us to have another electronic
mm-hmm.
option available to the licensees and now certificate holders. So we're adding another 4,000 potential audits to our roles.
Karen, I just have a question. Now, aptitude is no longer going to be available.
Correct.
Right?
It is no longer now available.
Is it? Are they going to have something else?
No.
Think, or?
No. That's why we did the committee, and that's why we searched out the opportunities that were available.
All right. So that's
so
completely gone.
Has there
that's
been
completely gone.
Okay.
In the past, has there been discussion about making something mandatory?
We have not had that discussion, but I could agendize that for you if you would like.
Aptitude is mandatory, right?
No. Aptitude was not mandatory. Well, aptitude is mandatory in some states, not here, not in Arizona.
But it has been done in other states.
Yes.
And so my question is, have we ever had that kind of discussion? Is that something we...
Not as long as I've been here.
If we wanted to do it, what would we have to do? What would it look like?
Right. Right. So, I mean, the way to get 100% compliance is to audit 100%, right? And that's the way you would go about doing that. You would need a platform like this in order for the staff to be able to do something else other than audit. So with this platform, you have that ability to have that discussion, and you have that discussion availability with aptitude as well.
Would it cost us if we made it a requirement?
No. I believe that is correct.
Still falls on the licensees to either do the free or one of the other two.
Correct.
Right?
Yes, but that would probably require maybe a rule change.
No,
because we can set the percentage. We can arbitrarily select the percentage of audit. So you could technically, we've never done it, pick 100% for your audit if you chose to.
And that would essentially force everybody to go into the CE.
Well, the first year that, what state was it? That did it the first year and had over 2,100
Alabama.
Complaints.
Alabama
did it. The first year they had 2,100 complaints of people who were not compliant, and then the next year they had like 1% that wasn't compliant. So the first year it's a lot of work because...
It was a similar case in Florida as well.
Yeah.
They estimated saving on average, I think it was $500,000 a year through audit enforcement, but the number they don't talk about was the amount of disciplinary issues they caught in those first few years from individuals who were just hoping I'll never come up in the 5% audit and hadn't been keeping up with their records. But we usually don't recommend going that route for the first year. We like the boards to keep it very optional for the first year or two, and then down the road, once licensees have already been introduced to the platform, we see that it's much easier to make that transition and say, okay, this year it's going to be required. One of the boards that's doing that right now is Georgia. They introduced it voluntary, I think, for the first 2 years, got everyone to renew, try it out once. I think they had 60 to 70% of their population used it when it was voluntary, and then for that next renewal period, they warned them, this year it's voluntary, next year you're going to be required to report here. So it was kind of a smooth transition period.
Hmm. So you think we could do it without a rules change?
We'd have to look. I mean, I'm just talking off the top of my head, but we would have to, Ms. Baskins and I could sit down and see if we needed a rules, which would bring us to 5B, which means we're not allowed to do any rules.
So I mean, we would have to have something. We would have to figure out if we could do it without the rules.
Right. But you do have control of the percentage. So even if it required a rules to make it mandatory, you still have the arbitrary ability to set your percentage. It just means that not all of it would have to go through there. Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then as the gentleman said, he recommends that there be a rollout period so that people have the opportunity
to make mistakes.
Right. Yeah. To try it out, which would maybe get us past this whole world's moratorium.
Well, I think I personally think it would be nice to have such a discussion. I don't know if we want to.
When would you like to agendize such a discussion?
Well,
I would say not February.
No, I'm not in a rush, but I think on a meeting where the agenda is not so long.
Now, I believe that to get to the next agenda item, I believe that there is a continued rules moratorium.
Wait, we have a motion on the table before you move. So what I would like approval for is that you approved it, but also to go ahead and engage in a contract with CE Brokers as a board.
Okay, that sort of dovetails into my last question, is that assuming this passes, how long could you, because you're going to have to take our statutes and you're going to have to build that in somehow, right?
Yes.
So how long would it take you? Maybe one of your slides says what?
Yeah, it's usually, if it's very simple, the requirements that can be as short as 90 days. When they get a little more complex, sometimes more like 120, 180 days.
Which
so
we still have available before the renewal.
Yeah. Well, Arizona's known for doing things really simple. So that's why we have categories A, B, and C. Okay. So
you have a motion, and I'm just going to amend the motion if the two people agree to also allow us to sign the contract so we can get started.
Would that
that need to be reviewed by the Attorney General's office?
You tell me, Mona, does it need to be reviewed by the Attorney General's office?
I did not see a contract review.
That's because we don't have one yet.
All right, well, I think we'd have to have it probably reviewed and brought back to the board for their review also.
And I can share a copy with you. So far, all of our contracts have been identical in Arizona for athletic trainers, occupational therapy, and then podiatry.
We can assume they've been
vetted
then?
It's the same version that was approved by the Attorney General's office.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, so it's already been vetted?
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right, and I'll follow up just to with my office on that
so
also.
So do we need to modify the motion then to include, or?
Do we have to bring it back to the board? Because that will totally screw our timeline if that's what you're requiring.
Well, I haven't seen it, and
well, it seems to me we're going to have somebody's going to have to look at the contract. And
well, yes, 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 yes.
And so you're going to have at least one lawyer look at it, right? And if you have two, then you've got three opinions. And
correct.
So,
right.
Somebody's going to look at that and say, yeah, we're okay with this contract. And then is it going to come back to us?
I think my opinion is best practice. You are the board. You are entering into the contract with this entity. I didn't know about the other board, so it's all new to me. That would be my recommendation, that the board would review it. You could make your motion that they can move forward with it, contingent upon formal acceptance at the next board meeting. I think as your lawyer, I would recommend that we take a look at it and the board takes a look at it also.
We
have a special board meeting.
I was going to say we could do a special board meeting if the timeline is an issue, right?
Telephonically,
yes. Yeah,
we still have time. We can do it at the next meeting, but we'll have it done by the next meeting.
As a board, we probably have to say yes.
But if it's already vetted, even if it's already vetted by the Attorney General's office or the other boards, you want this board to come back and approve the contract.
I do.
And
let's
just assume that can be a phone call, special or special meeting, and
okay.
We can handle that quick.
Yeah, I will definitely follow up. I didn't realize the other agencies had gone through that. I didn't know about that.
Okay.
But yes, that's what I would advise. That's best practice.
All right.
That's what we'll do.
So everybody understand the motions?
Mm-hmm. All right. All in favor, listen to me. Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
Dr. Pastillo?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Mr. Cliff?
Yes.
All right, thank you, and thank you.
Thank you all so
much.
Thank you.
Okay, item 5B, review and discussion of governor's executive order.
So the executive order that you have and you've read means no more rules, it continues. So this is our, I think, 11th year without being able to do rules. So so it just continues on.
I don't have any discussion.
Okay. I didn't know if you had any questions, so just to let you know. So anything we were looking at as far as supervision and all that, it's just on the back burner still. Okay. All right, telemedicine. Cynthia's not here, but... Cynthia, please join us. I didn't see you stop back in. Here we are. Just pull up a chair, Cynthia.
Do you need an extra copy for?
No, we have an extra one.
Thank you again. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I just stopped back in to follow up on the telemedicine bill that it was initiated by the Physical Therapy Association. Over the past 2 months, we were in contact with other rehab groups and together submitted the bill and will be scheduled in the House Health Committee first. The other groups participating in this House bill are the Occupational Therapy Association, Speech-Language Hearing, Audiologists, and Athletic Trainers. We've also been contacted by the Chiropractic Association, who would also like to join the bill. We put them in touch with the sponsor, Representative Shaw, for his decision on their inclusion initially, probably to be amended at the House Health hearing. And I just have returned from a meeting with Representative Bartow, who's chair of the House Health Committee. We anticipated being scheduled for a hearing next Thursday. Some of the questions we anticipate from the legislators
assuming it's passed, then would that include, you know, allowing us to make rules relative to it, or?
I would assume it would have to. We did try to research what new rules that the Board of Medicine, osteopathy, podiatry, behavioral health had written when they were allowed telemedicine privileges, and we didn't really find any. So I guess that's up to your decision as a board and the other rehab boards to feel like if there are circumstances where physical therapists need additional regulation to be able to provide that service. There are elements in the existing statute that deal with patient-informed consent and confidentiality, kind of all the basic things that apply to all providers, but it's not specific to any particular discipline of treatment.
Any other states that allow telemedicine have rules for physical therapists?
Yes, they do. The International Journal of Telerehab has a fairly comprehensive article about services, PT and OT services in all 50 states. Some are regulated by statute, some are regulated strictly by regulation. Some are regulations that apply to all providers, some are specific in practice acts. So state of Washington might be a good example for the board to look at if they were looking at to consider something for the specific physical therapy statute.
With so many other players in the, bill, would the rules would be just specific to physical therapy, it wouldn't affect OT or AT.
Right.
So if they wanted some, they would go ahead and do their rules, et cetera. Okay. Okay. Anybody else have any other questions? So we'll see how it goes on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming back.
Sure.
All right.
So you have the list of the work and that we've done as far as applications.
Mm-hmm.
I also provided you the December 2019. Remember, that's our halfway point in our budget. We're well under our allocation at this point. We'll see if we can't just spend a little more money on something.
Yeah,
we're well below. And then I've given you the governor's proposal for 2021, which is the same as 2020. We believe that that's probably adequate at this point, given that we don't anticipate any major like staffing changes or anything.
No mandates coming down the road.
What's that?
No mandates coming down the road.
You never know. Those can happen on a day. But we have no one-time expenditures that we think. The only thing that we might have an expenditure for that we have not allocated for is that if the minimum data set questions for a renewal, which we're trying to get into renewal, they're going to cost us something to put them in e-licensing or not. The initial thing is no, I think we can do it, but that always isn't always the answer. So we'll see. We're also going to start to test our renewals because, again, there's no guarantee that the system is going to work any better than it did last time. So we're going to try to pre-test as much of it as we can. Well, just
is it here. Is it at all possible that it could work worse?
No, there's no possibility that it could work worse.
And I think
the only benefit we have at this point is that everybody should have an account where they didn't have an account the first time.
Yeah.
But I still see us not being able to answer phones or emails. I still see the onslaught being tremendously unserviceable. So because people will forget their password, they haven't been in it, they don't know what to do. And I do honestly think that we're going to have not equal trouble, but we're going to have a very difficult time being able to handle the onslaught of phone calls again.
So, but it sounds like we have resources, if necessary, that we can hire temporary work members.
No, we don't have that ability to do that, but
no?
We can ask for an army of volunteers to help us. So I could think of some people who would be willing to, like Ms. Hiller, that would help us answer some phones. And yeah, any of you that want to do that. But we really don't have the ability to hire a contract without a big, huge process in order to do that through the state. At some point, I would really almost like to hire somebody part-time that just answers our phones. That would probably solve all of our communication woes if we just had somebody dedicated to a central line, answer our phones, and then feed out the questions to the appropriate person. Someday I'd like to do that.
Okay. Any questions about, all right. Call to the public? Is anybody out there that wants to say something, do something? You've been here all day, you know. It's been, chairs were relatively comfortable then, okay? Can we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded.
Ms. Hunter?
Yes.
Dr. Castillo?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Ms. Remick?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Thank you for our marathon.
Thank you.
Thank you.